Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Great way to start the show.
That was a pen that just got thrown across the studio because that's how we do things on Tuesday mornings here at FS1. Great. Chris Carter, Nick Wright, Jenna Wolf, big show today. Steve Kerr taking a shot at James Harden, but why? Giannis and the Bucks look to even up the series against the Celtics.
Did they take me out the hall?
What? Oh, Hall of Famer Chris Carter.
Oh, apologies.
No.
I saw the look in his face.
That was
like, you forgot his honorific, Ms. Wolf.
My bad. 100%. What? We got to start with last night's action for me, for Nick.
You're
and
on probation after
Hall
last night, see.
Sixers looking to even up their series with the Raptors, and it was the Jimmy Butler show with Joel Embiid playing sick. Butler had 30 points, 11 rebounds in a 94-89 Philadelphia win. Their first win in Toronto since 2012, snapping a 14-game losing streak. All right, so the series is now all tied up at a game apiece. Game three set for Philly on Thursday. Here's Sixers head coach Brett Brown after the game.
This was James Butler. Like, that was the adult in the gym.
Coach came in here and he said, this wasn't Jimmy Butler tonight, it was James Butler, because
how
mature.
My name isn't James, literally it's Jimmy.
He talked about your maturity. What do you think he was seeing there that made him feel that way?
I don't know. I'm telling you, they put a lot of confidence in me before the game. I put in a lot of work last night as well as this morning, but all in all, man, it was a team effort. I always go back to defense. You know, we get stops, we're taking off into the open floor. Guys are making plays like Joe and Ben. You know, whenever we're playing like that, guarding like that, we're such a good team. We definitely have to continue to do it and know that on any given night, it's going to be somebody's night. We have the group of guys that anybody can get hot. Anybody can put the ball in the basket. You feed that hot hand.
You know, guys, we talked, last time they played about how this Toronto team was unstoppable with Kawhi playing the way he was playing. He had another great night, and yet despite Joel Embiid being sick, the Sixers came out and they beat this team. How were they able to do it, CeCe?
Great win by the 76ers. Shorthanded. Coming to the game shorthanded, missing one of their number one reserves.
Mike Scott,
his inability to be there those two games. So for them to be able to get a split, Joel Embiid had some type of gastrovirus, bad stomach. So he was, you know, a little under the weather. So he was not himself. So as you can see, Jimmy Butler in the press conference talked about how the game plan was to go through him. And he was going to run the offense. And this Philly team is best when Jimmy Butler is running the offense and very, very aggressive. Joel Embiid, it was amazing in the Brooklyn series. Joel Embiid is out. Then Ben Simmons emerges. The other players, Tobias, he starts to get his offensive game going. So it's kind of a weird thing that their best player, if he's injured, out, not 100%, seems like the offense has more flow to it. But Jimmy Butler took over early, and whenever they needed a big shot, before halftime, he made the play. Third quarter, he made the plays. And at the end of the game, Joel Embiid passes the ball out to him. He's able to knock down a dagger three. So Jimmy Butler, this was the best game that I could say he's played as a 76er under critical situations, Joel Embiid being hurt, other players not great on the offensive end, and their bench. Their bench without Mike Scott. Now, his name is James Ennis. Mm-hmm. His ability to be able to come in, 12 points in the first half, 12 of the 13 that he scored. And as much as people have criticized him, Greg Monroe coming off the bench gave them invaluable minutes and some found offense that you're not expecting to see when Greg Monroe's in the game.
That might have been the most shocking part of the game was the Raptors' vaunted bench unit was outscored whenever they were out there. The Philly reserves outplayed the Raptors reserves, which I didn't think could happen in any game this series, much less the critical game too. And Philly should be thrilled to get a split. Jimmy Butler was awesome, and their defense in the first half was about as well as you can play this team defensively. Ben Simmons in the first quarter in particular was swallowing up Kawhi Leonard. Pascal Siakam could get nothing going against Joel Embiid at the rim. Defensively, Philly was really sensational in the first half. But I don't want to overreact to game ones, and I don't want to overreact to game twos. If you watch the second half of this game, despite having a 13-point halftime lead, which I tweeted at the time, you mentioned it independent of my tweet this morning, see?
Yes.
They had an opportunity. Philly had an opportunity to have it be up 20. Ben yes. Simmons blows a layup with less than a minute left in the first half. Embiid gets a foul after the blown layup. All of a sudden, Toronto goes on a little 5-0 run. It was a big moment. Because then Toronto opens the second quarter, I think, on another 5-0 run. And all of a sudden, it's a dogfight the rest of the way. Even though they had that 13-point lead to start the half, even though they regained the 13-point lead with about 5 minutes left in the game, it felt to me like Philly was holding on for dear life the entire mm-hmm. second half. When Joel Embiid made the one great offensive play he made all game, the spinning layup with 24 seconds left, put him up three, that was the first time it seemed like you might be able to exhale a little bit, but even after that, they gave up a wide-open Danny Green three-pointer to potentially tie the game. This was a great play by Joel Embiid and the best offensive play he made all night. So I say all that to say this. Philly is going to be very lucky if when they go back to Philadelphia, they are able to just split those two games, much less win both of them. I think even in this game, even in this Philly win, you saw how many advantages that Toronto has in this matchup. Mm-hmm. You saw that even when I thought Ben Simmons, he was terrible offensively, really awful. But defensively, he was quite good. And he was matched up on Kawhi. And then you're like, oh. Kawhi still found a way to score 35 points.
Yeah, I missed that part.
They are.
They have no answer for Kawhi.
They have no answer for Kawhi. And, I mean, Kawhi talked after the game that Ben was matched up on him and did a good job on him. And I thought he did, too. And Kawhi still got his 30-plus. So I think Philly's going to need to have a lights-out shooting night and to continue this level of defense in order to have it, when it goes back to Toronto, just be 2-2, forget 3-1 Philly, because I think even in a loss last night for Toronto, you saw the systemic edges they have in this series.
You know, you mentioned the Toronto's reserve players and their role players, and that's usually something when we talk about Toronto, what do they have? Well, they have Kawhi. They sometimes get a great game out of Siakam, and then they have that incredible bench, and they have those mm-hmm. great role players. They haven't been great the first two games. It's really everything gone through Kawhi and Siakam. Are you worried now when it goes back to Philly? It's harder for them. In the past, role players don't even play that well on the road as they do at home.
No, I'm not concerned, because what they get from their starting five should be enough besides Serge Ibaka. He is a key six member of that rotation. I'm surprised that Fred VanVleet hadn't been better. Like, he hadn't been better since he came back from the injury.
Yep.
Only not necessarily the player shooting the ball from deep, but they have the matchups. Danny Green disappeared in this game. He scores 3 points. First game, Kyle Lowry, he disappears. So their backcourt has been tremendously inconsistent.
And Lowry didn't really even show up in this game offensively until the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. Lowry made a couple huge threes late,
yep.
but he was on a seven-quarter slump offensively to start this series. And Marc Gasol, here's the thing. So Marc Gasol, I think in the first game, was 3 of 8. In this game, he was 1 of 6. Nobody in the league defends Joel Embiid better than Marc Gasol. Over the last 2 years, Joel Embiid, on 238 possessions guarded by Gasol, has scored 38 points. Is shooting 31% from the field with Gasol guarding him. It's similar, see, to that Al Horford matchup. Those mm-hmm. kind of bulkier, smarter, unathletic fives give Embiid real trouble. And that's why you can have Marc Gasol play 35 minutes and only make one basket. And the Raptors outscored the Sixers when he was on the court because he neutralized Embiid, and he neutralized Embiid to a degree in game one when Embiid wasn't under the weather. Listen, the Sixers were my preseason finals pick. I would love to, after they steal home court, say, see, this is the team they can be. If you watched that entire game, it's a great mm-hmm. win. They played great defensively, and Butler was extraordinary. I don't think the way they won yesterday is sustainable going in this series. They need Embiid to be great, and they need Ben Simmons to be far better on the offensive end.
All right, 30 points out of Jimmy Butler as the Sixers even up their series with the Toronto Raptors. Take a break. Coming up, did Steve Kerr troll James Harden ahead of Game 2? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, it's Nick Wright. A quick word from our friends over at Indochino. Did you know that made-to-measure suits fit better compared to generic off-the-rack suits? Many say that a man looks better and feels more confident when he puts on a suit. Indochino is exactly what you need. Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and colors to choose from, not to mention the option to personalize the details, including your lapel, lining, pockets, buttons, and writing your own monogram. So here's how it works. Visit a stylist at a showroom of your choice located across the U.S. and have them take your measurements personally. Or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric, both inside and out. Choose your design customizations. Submit your measurements with your choices. And then kick back and relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in just a couple weeks. This week, our listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering the code FTF at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. Again, that's Indochino.com, promo code FTF for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. Incredible deals for a premium made-to-measure suit. Once you go custom, you don't go back.
Welcome back. We'll get to the Warriors and the Rockets in a second, but first, Sixers-Raptors, Pascal Siakam. Nice moves to score over Joel Embiid.
Siakam was struggling from an efficiency standpoint all night after the best playoff game of his career by a wide margin. The Sixers answered defensively throughout. This is one of his better moves, so credit to him on this one, but he had a tougher night.
Same game. This time, Embiid showing off the footwork with a nice up and under.
He made a couple special plays at the end. God bless you.
Thank you.
As he blessed Canada at the end of the game, made this move right here to put Philadelphia up by three. Also made a great pass out of a double team where it seemed like there was no light, getting it to Jimmy Butler where he knocks it down.
Blazers and Nuggets. Gary Harris goes up and under the rim to make an incredible reverse layup.
This angle on this play, this angle right here, shows the degree of difficulty of that. That's a great basketball play right there. The hang time, waiting until the defender's clear, being able to get up there with the right English on the backboard, that was great.
Yeah, that's one of Coach Izzo's guys. Coach Izzo taught him that right there. The hang time comes from Coach Izz, man.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, man, back in his day.
Coach Izzo, basketball coach, accordion player, and hang time expert.
Wish he was a football player.
That was a great play.
Same game. Check out Damian Lillard's vicious step back before knocking down the three over who, Nick?
Nikola Jokic, but Nikola had a great game. These are two of the last three games.
Give it
Nikola's
up.
Nikola's been fantastic.
Same intensity.
No. Jenna's tried to set me up to knock him because he got Dame hit the shot on him, but I'm not going to. Nikola was tremendous last night and played 40-plus minutes, didn't wear down at the end the way he did in Game 7. He was great.
Moving on to the Rockets-Warriors series, Game 1 marred by referee controversy. Golden State got the win. Houston got the headlines. James Harden, in particular, complaining about missed calls down the stretch. And Warriors head coach Steve Kerr didn't flinch at the opportunity to take a jab at Harden ahead of tonight's game at Oracle.
Hang on.
Jeez. Who's that foul on? Is that a man?
That was on him.
What do you think about coming out of Houston camp?
It's disappointing because the focus should be on two teams who played extremely hard. I mean, watching the tape, you know, both teams just got after it and competed. But you know, we just watched the tape upstairs. You don't think there were 10 calls that we thought we got fouled? I mean, this is how it goes. And every coach in the league will tell you the same thing. You watch the tape and you go, man, that's a foul, that's a foul. It's the nature of the game. So I'm disappointed that this has become the whole narrative when it really should be about two great teams competing against each other.
All right, so Rockets GM Daryl Morey fired back, tweeting out an article of a 2016 report about Steve Kerr getting fined for complaining about refs missing calls. It's all right there. Mm-hmm. Nick, will officiating continue to be the headline, do you think, in this series?
I hope not, and I hope the officials call the game the way they've been calling it throughout the year, at least to a degree similar to how they've been calling the landing zone throughout the year. But Steve Kerr's right, by the way, if they watch the tape. There weren't 10 calls, missed calls that went against the Warriors. There were actually 11. According to the NBA's own data, there were 11 blown calls that hurt the Warriors. The problem is there were 17, according to the NBA's own data, that hurt the Rockets of obvious missed calls. So that's a plus 6 difference. That means now, officially, according to the NBA's data, in 7 of the 8 playoff games these teams have played, including 6 consecutive dating back to Game 2 of last year's Western Conference Finals, the NBA's own data says the Warriors have gotten the beneficial whistle. The publicly available data says there were 3 blown calls in the final 2 minutes of that basketball game. 2 fouls on Steph Curry, which would have been his 6th and 7th foul, one of which, after bumping James Harden out of bounds, he taunted James Harden by pointing at the sideline. That would have been his 6th foul. And then a 7th foul on the one that Chris Paul ended up getting the technical and thrown out of the game on. So, I mean, listen, it is kind of amazing to me for the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, a team that employs Draymond Green, a team that in consecutive years has led the league in technicals, a team that in consecutive years has had the player who leads the league in technicals, is going to say we shouldn't be complaining about the officials. But I hope officiating isn't the storyline moving forward, but it justifiably was the storyline of Game 1.
It was one of the storylines. The problem is not with, because everyone in the NBA complains. If I have one complaint about the NBA, is the players complain too much on the court. No one's committed a foul in NBA history. I don't know an NBA player that, back when you used to, in high school and in college, when they called a foul on you, you used to have to raise your hand and be like, oh, that foul's on me, so the scorekeeper and everything be able to keep track of it. Now, they got 2 hands raised every time. Who, me? Like it, I mean, all NBA players are bad. So this is just not a James Harden thing. This is not Houston Golden State. Golden State complains about the referees every single game. The biggest problem here is Houston going to be able to get its focus back? Because, Nick, you talked about last year's playoff. We know who the world champ was. Don't nobody care about that storyline. Oh, in 5 of the 7 games, the whistle went to the Rockets. Well, you know something? People don't care. People care about winning. So the Rockets, they need to get off the officials and worry about what adjustments they're going to make. How can I get Clinton Capella to take advantage of his size against these Warriors? Those are the things going to decide this series. How can I get P.J. Tucker more shots than Shumpert and or House is shooting? Because last game, they shot the same number of shots. So for me, those are the things more important than worrying about the refereeing, because I believe, just like all referees, they're human, they got bosses, there will be a correction made. And I don't want them to call it like they did during the regular season. I want them to referee like they're refereeing all the other games.
Right.
Where guys are able to shoot 3-pointers and to build the land, and I believe that will occur in tonight's game.
So that's an interesting point. I mean, how do the players go into this game and take all that stuff out of it? How does Houston put together a game plan to beat the Warriors, if regardless of what the officiating?
When you go to
be?
Shoot tonight, you can't be worrying about a guy sliding up under you.
Of course.
And if they have spent all this time, they got their front office, they got their coaches, if they got their players, we're going to find out tonight. Did they make any adjustments? Because the refs will make adjustments based on the way Game 1 was called.
And to answer your question, how can they win tonight? I believe, and I think if you watch the game, I think most people believe, they played well enough to win Game 1. I don't think they need to make a major adjustment. Now, they need to hit open corner threes. They missed a bunch of open corner threes. Chris Paul, I think, to the thing you harped on yesterday.
They do. I mean, from an offensive standpoint, they do have to make some major adjustments.
I guess we're going to disagree on the term major. I think the only major adjustments I would make is I'm trying to get more lobs to Capella.
If Clinton Capella takes 2 shots,
yes,
Okay.
Agree.
What about P.J. Tucker?
So P.J. Tucker is the only shots he takes are corner threes. He's the best corner three shooter in the league. He's out there for his defense. And to shoot wide open corner threes in that game on Sunday afternoon, he had three wide open corner threes. He missed all three. Like, P.J. Tucker is not a volume shooter.
He only took four shots, Nick. He's a starter.
I understand it, but he will take as many open corner threes as they have.
And if they don't score, if they don't score buckets, if they don't balance their offense, if Chris Paul is not aggressive, Chris Paul only took nine shots. Now, these are major adjustments if the Rockets are going to continue, because what they did during the regular season, just like Milwaukee, sometimes that does not work in the postseason. If they don't have balance, I believe they go back home 0-2.
So, during the regular season, they didn't have balance. During the regular season,
I just said that, but that doesn't work in the playoffs. It didn't work in this game.
Okay.
But we'll see. The game will be played tonight.
Well, listen, if you are expecting the Rockets to come out, I feel like we had this exact conversation when the Rockets fell down against the Warriors last year. I know we did when they were down 1-0 and they're down 2-1. Too much ISO ball. Why are they playing this way? They play how they play. If that style can't beat the Warriors, maybe it can't beat the Warriors.
Well, this is the big difference. Mm-hmm. They weren't playing against the Hampton Five. Steve Kerr showed you his hand. They got the Hampton Five out there. Okay, well, let's pound them in the middle. Because for every move, there's a counter move. In the playoffs, there's adjustments. Every team makes them. I believe Houston will make some significant adjustments to be able to try to get the win in game number two.
See, last year, until Iguodala went out with the injury, they were absolutely playing against the Hampton Five. It was the same team, even if it wasn't the team. Even if they didn't start the lineup in game one with the Hampton Five, they ultimately went to it. And the only plays at the rim the Rockets are going to have are James Harden drives and Clint Capella lobs. We are in agreement that Clint Capella should get more lobs. That in game one, Harden was still, it seemed like, had the visions of Rudy Gobert in his mind. But if you are expecting tonight the Rockets to play a different style than they've played for 3 years, it's not what's going to happen. Do they need to be more efficient? Yes, they need to make more shots. But they're not going to change how they play. Like, we have 200 games of information and multiple playoff series against the Warriors showing they're not going to change how they play.
What about the Warriors, CeCe? Do they start the same starting five? Do you want to see any adjustments made from them, since that's a game they definitely could have lost?
I think the Warriors, they realize that's their best lineup. And Steve Kerr said, I'm going to put them out there as many minutes as possible. The biggest difference now is Iggy seems a little bit healthier. He's playing great defense, and when they get the pick and rolls and the switches, he is great at the pick and roll on the defensive end. Draymond Green, it talked about it, man. He lost 20 pounds since earlier in the season. You could see his initial quickness, his burst, how he's engaged in the game. Like, they are major difference makers for them. They don't have much of a bench, so they can't get into foul trouble, but that's what I expect with Golden State. Klay didn't play well in game one. Steph didn't play well in game. So there's a higher level that the Warriors can go to, and that's the reason why they're back-to-back champs.
There's no question the Warriors can go to a higher level. The Rockets are going to defensively, once again, Steph could have six bad games in a row. They are going to give the lion's share of attention to Steph Curry to make sure to try to run him off the three-point line. He still took 10 threes in game number one, even though he was the focus of their defense. Kevin Durant took 25 shots, not counting shots he was fouled on. 22 of them were inside the three-point line. They are going to, if Kevin Durant's going to shoot contested twos, which he's probably the best in the league at contested twos, the Rockets are going to live with it. Yeah. So defensively, I believe they'll have a very similar game plan. Offensively, they'll try to get Capella more involved on the lobs, but I don't think the Rockets are going to change who they are. I think they're going to hope they actually, Daniel House, Shump, P.J. Tucker, those guys hit their shots, and that they get some of these calls they didn't get in game one.
No, I don't expect the Rockets to change who they are, but if you're going to be a championship team, you have to have a number of ways that you can win. And with them having the small lineup out there to start the game, it would be able to send a message from a physicality standpoint. Because I care about the analytics, but basketball's a game of matchups. They don't have anyone to protect the rim. So I would try to take more shots at the rim, especially early in the game, than I typically would. Now, I know games are about styles. Fights are about styles and about matchups. So I expect Houston ultimately to get back to what they do, but they have a huge size advantage. And if they don't take advantage of that in this series, it will be two straight years where they might have had a better team, but they went home with the same result.
All right, we got to take a break. Let's get back to the East on the other side. Do Giannis and the Bucks need to change their game plan against the Celtics? That's next. This is First Things First.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
FIFA Women's World Cup kicks off June 7th. All eyes will be on Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd, and the U.S. Women's National Team as the defending champions head to France looking to win an historic fourth World Cup. This is exciting. All matches will be live here on Fox and FS1.
I cannot wait for this event. Absolutely love it. I'm so thrilled we have it.
All right, time now for us to go viral. James Harden will look to bounce back against the Warriors tonight in Game 2, and he might want to take some pointers from this cop who hits the smooth step-back jumper in full uniform.
Yeah, that fellow knows not to step under his landing area. Now give him a wide berth, sir. I feel
like... That's not James.
Oh, no, Jenna. Jenna, don't finish the thought. Tonight's video, a little community outreach in Philly.
Yes.
Seeing some kids playing ball.
Man, this is great right here. Absolutely.
Time for our stories to start.
We don't have that type of relationship with the police. When they stop us, it's for a different reason.
Sixers-Raptors game 2 of all the stars playing. In this one, Jimmy Butler was the featured attraction. He went off for 30 points and 11 rebounds in Philly's 94-89 road win. That series now tied at a game apiece. CC, you surprised the Sixers stole a win last night?
Not surprised, because Jimmy Butler, man, when you allow him to be aggressive, he was a primary ball handler in their offense for the most part of the game. Their bench helped him out. They don't have a good bench. And with Mike Scott being out, being able to get a win in Toronto, great team win. Good job coaching by Brett Brown. Great adjustments that he made in game number 2.
Defensively, Philly played almost a perfect game in the first half. Jimmy Butler was extraordinary throughout. They need Embiid to get healthier physically and intestinally.
He just had a little gas, man.
Well, no, it was a little worse than that. A
little bubble guts north of the board.
Ben Simmons seemed to expend all his energy on the defensive end. It was as poor offensively as you're going to see him play, and
that's
he still found a way to win.
Yeah.
It's not an excuse. It's
what
happened.
He disappeared. Sometimes it was 5-on-4.
Mm-hmm. It's just what happened.
The other game last night, Blazers, Nuggets. Nikola Jokic poured in 37 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists. Denver getting the game one win, 121-113. Nick Wright, what did last night tell you about this series?
Look, Portland's got to play way better defensively. They didn't bring the intensity they brought on the defensive end against the Thunder to this series. And Jokic, hey man. He was great. Jokic, a guy who I think it's well documented, went from so underrated he became overrated. Over the last week or so, he's playing like those fans in Denver would say the type of player that he is. He's playing the way a real superstar should play. He was sensational.
Yeah, he might not ever be great on the defensive end, but he's a special player. His ability to be able to pass, he has an awkward offensive game, can shoot the three, has a low post game. The national scene just haven't seen him a lot. So he's improving. Still a very, very young player. He is the superstar on that franchise, and he's the guy that you have to key on and stop.
My beef with Jokic is in defense independent wasn't a high volume enough scorer. Was outside the top 25 in scoring. Now in game 6 against the Spurs, he pours in 40 plus. Last night's 37. Those are the performances.
Yeah, that's not an apology.
I don't need to apologize.
You're getting there.
I'm giving him credit for something he's actually now done.
Moving on to the things we're seeing on our TVs. With the NFL draft officially in the books, the Super Bowl odds are out. And surprise, surprise, the Patriots are the favorites to win Super Bowl 54. CC, are the Pats the team to beat again this season?
Of course they are. Vegas is trying to tell you. They look at the schedule. They know what's going on. They know who the starting quarterback might be in Miami. Who? Second-year Josh Rosen. Who in the Jets? Second-year player.
Darnold.
Buffalo. Josh Allen. Second-year. Okay, so let's get us 6 wins right there. Home field advantage. Let's go to Gillette. Get you in the Super Bowl 54 in Miami.
Here's the thing. If the Patriots we're going to, if they could win the Super Bowl last year, when they have the fewest regular season wins they've had in a decade, when they have the worst road record that they've had under Belichick in over a decade, when they don't have the road go through Gillette, then of course they should be the favorites this year. I mean, if last year was the year to get them and the Chiefs had them and then let them go, so especially with the Chiefs dealing with all the things they're dealing with this offseason, they shouldn't come back better than they were last year. And so, of course, the Patriots
even if the Chiefs did come back better than last year, the Patriots got a wild card in their back pocket. They went to Kansas City and beat them there. All right?
Patriots got it. On to the number one overall pick, Kyler Murray, the Cardinals quarterback, getting ready and getting some high praise from his new teammate, Larry Fitzgerald, who said Kyler is, quote, a special talent. So you see, with Murray the favorite to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, what are realistic expectations for him in his first year?
I would be careful. I would be very, very careful. I believe he's as talented as a quarterback that we've come in the league, especially guys under 6 foot, but is he going to have the things that support you as a quarterback? Drew Brees was not Drew Brees when he started off with the Chargers originally. Now, he could always very, very accurate with the football, but he was not a prolific passer of the football. Russell Wilson started with a defensive dominant team and a running attack. That's how he started off his NFL career. Mm-hmm. So he was supported. How are they going to support Kyler? Larry Fitzgerald's the nicest guy, one of the nicest human beings ever. He's the only one that can make their offense sound like it looks promising. Their offensive line is atrocious. And I don't care how big you are, how fast you are in this league, Michael Vick, Lamar Jackson, they will tell you that rush will get to you. Potentially they're playing in one of the toughest divisions. San Francisco, look what they're throwing at you from a front four standpoint. Seattle, we know what they do defensively. And the Rams have the best rusher that we've seen in the NFL in a long time in Aaron Donald. So I'm careful with my expectations, all right, because that franchise right now, even with Larry Fitzgerald, they're not a great offensive team. And the worst part of their offense is their offensive line.
This is not a bet I would make. And it's nothing against Kyler. And because there was such a disproportionate number of defensive players taken high in the draft, there's not a bunch of great candidates for Offensive Rookie of the Year when you're looking at it, because you had three quarterbacks taken, you had the running back at Alabama, a lot of the wide receivers we thought were going to be in the first round fell later. So I understand why Vegas would say Kyler. He's going to be the week one starter, we would assume. Brett Hundley is the other quarterback on their roster. That's another thing they might need to show. Bringing in a veteran to help usher Kyler along in this process. But when you spend the number one pick on a quarterback and when you only get a late second rounder back for Rosen, it is hard to upgrade what was the weakest point of your team last year, which was the league's worst offensive line. And offensive line not only made Josh Rosen look bad, made a healthy David Johnson look just wildly overpaid. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's fair to David Johnson. It's just what he looked like last year, running behind that offensive line.
The other things I'm worrying about, Cliff Kingsbury. Now, we have seen the best in college football come to the pros and really struggle. He was not good in college. And the one problem that they have, if you criticize the air raid or the offense that they run, they have a problem with pass protection.
Yeah.
They don't make it a priority like NFL offenses. So now I have a coach who's unproven, wasn't great in college football, coming to take over a team that in his system, the number one deficiency is the inability to be able to protect the passer. So there's a lot of things that I'm going to have to be able to see. I know Steve Keim. I know the Bidwell family. They briefed Larry Fitzgerald, and that's their talking points, yeah. And that's what Larry spit out as the voice of the owner.
But how much more leeway is Kyler Murray and Kingsbury going to get that Steve Wilks and Josh Rosen didn't get last year? I mean, if it's basically the same nuts and bolts of this team, the same offensive line, yeah, he can run around a little bit more, but is he going to get more than a year to figure out?
No, Kyler, you spend the number one pick on a guy, Kyler's going to
get...
Well,
hold on. They moved up to get the 10th pick on a guy. You would think they would have more invested interest in Josh Rosen making it work and sticking out.
Yeah,
but
next
year they got a number one
guy.
Not
more than the number one overall pick. Kyler will get... Let's not start the clock on Kyler before rookie camps even opened up. Kyler's going to get... Teams don't Rosen is the outlier situation. Teams' mistake on first-round picks typically is they wait too long to pull the ripcord rather than they pull it early. It's a very short list of guys where you're like, wow, he turned into a great quarterback. The team that drafted him gave up on him too early. It's a much longer list of, wait, they're still trotting Blake Bortles out there? Wait, Ryan Tannehill got another year? Go ahead.
No, we just talked about Drew Brees as a team that might have given up on him. We just mentioned that.
So Drew Brees wasn't a first-round pick. Drew Brees also, he had a terrible season. He had such a bad season 1 year that he won comeback player of the year the following year without coming off an injury.
And then he had a devastating injury.
And they had Phillip Rivers in town. Like, they had spent a top five pick on. So that, but that is the fact that we have to go back nearly 20 years find Drew Brees. And because they had such a short leash on the previous coach and quarterback.
That they'll give them more time.
Absolutely. I mean, Kyler's going to be the quarterback there for his rookie deal, and they hope for the next 15 years. Kingsbury doesn't have that long of a timetable, but they're not going to go one and done in back-to-back years with coaches.
No, they made a mistake last year. It's not as if they're trying to rectify the mistake. They thought the kid was a special talent. That's what Steve Keim, I listened to all his interviews and everything. It wasn't as if we didn't believe Josh Rosen could be a starting quarterback. Yeah. We just believe that this kid is special. Much respect. First person ever drafted. First round Major League Baseball. First round of the NFL. I was talking to Jenna this morning. Imagine if this was Deion Sanders and Bo Jackson. How much confidence would we have in them? Now, this guy is a better athlete prospect than both of them. Wow.
As far as where they were drafted.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the Celtics-Bucks series now. This is what we know. Giannis has put together an MVP-caliber season. This is what we don't know. Where was that caliber in the Bucks Game 1 loss to Boston? The Greek Freak finished with just 22 points, stymied by the Celtics' lockdown defense. Here's Giannis on if he thinks the Bucks need to make any adjustments for Game 2 tonight in Milwaukee.
No, definitely not. We're just going to keep doing what we've been doing all year. I don't think there should be no change at all. Why should be a change after a game that we lost? You know, like, we should not be the team that, you know, make the adjustment. Even though we lost the first game, we're just going to come out and, you know, play our hardest and see how game two go. You know, if it doesn't go well for us, then you can think about, you know, adjusting. But right now, we're not adjusting nothing. We're just going to play BS. We're going to go out there and compete.
What do you think, Nick? Is Giannis right that this team doesn't need to make any adjustments? Maybe get their shots to fall, but no adjustments?
There might be some minor tweaks I would make, like Pat Connaughton maybe isn't going to get as long of a leash as he got in Game 1. I would look at how the Celtics adjusting their starting lineup might adjust the way I come out, not with my lineup, but with my initial opening sets. But I totally agree with Giannis. There's a reason this team won 49 games by double digits. There's a reason this team had the number one defense. There's a reason he is going to finish first or second in the MVP voting. Everything that happened in Game 1 was unlike Milwaukee Buck basketball. The number one defense in the league allowed the Celtics to have their best shooting night since the All-Star break. Giannis had his worst game. Worst game he's had, lowest percentage from two, fewest makes from two, fewest makes in the paint of any game all season. Like, that is not duplicable. And a team that had number three offense could not make an open three-point shot. So maybe C's going to disagree, but I think it would be foolish for the Bucks to overreact to what was an outlier performance by their best player, an outlier performance by their defense, and an outlier performance by their shooters. Trust who you are. If this happened in Game 4 of the series, no one would say the Bucks should remake who they are. The Bucks also, I think, were damaged by, and they didn't really have to play playoff basketball in the first round. They played Detroit. Detroit's happy to be there. They didn't have Blake the first two games. They had a hampered Blake the next two games. So the Bucks got punched in the face with playoff intensity. They will come out and look like the Milwaukee Bucks tonight, playing the way they have played all year.
The last four seasons, we've heard LeBron James said the regular season doesn't matter. Everything's totally different in the postseason. So we have seen teams. And the same coach that's coaching Milwaukee Bucks and coached them to all them wins this year, 4 years ago, he coached Atlanta Hawks to 60 wins. And they end up losing to LeBron James, getting swept. So it's a 60-win team that didn't advance to the NBA Finals. They're one of the few teams. So can this happen again? I believe it can happen again. You have to always make adjustments. If you're not playing, they didn't blow out the Celtics in the first game. So them 49 games where they blew teams out, they didn't play that way. So, Nick, we talked about Houston. Oh, they're not going to make adjustments. Sports is about adjustments. And you can't wait till you get down 2-0, make adjustments. The good teams make adjustments in games, New England, or after a game, and I believe that they will. And the adjustment can be simple as this. Let's get back to the style we played during the regular season. That would be an adjustment from game number one. It's not that complicated. Giannis doesn't have a whole bunch of playoff experience. So for me, for him, if he missed on this, would I be surprised? No. If you look at all the younger players in the playoffs, they have struggled with being consistent. That's Joel Embiid. That's Giannis. That's Ben Simmons.
Yep.
I mean, but the veteran players, Kawhi, KD, and some of those others,
you
have seen them be consistent. So I can't expect Giannis to have this figured out. But in the back of my mind, I am looking back. Hey, Coach Bud, now, you did have a 60-win team in the Hawks.
But that 60, they made the conference finals. They didn't get swept early. They made the conference finals. They lost to a really good Cavs team.
I think it's very important that the fans know that that guy coaching the number one seed also coached a 60 team with the Hawks. Because I don't believe people put those things together.
No, I understand that. But I don't want it to seem like I think most people looked at that Hawks team as they achieved their maximum level of success. Yes, they were the one seed, but they didn't have LeBron. They didn't have Kyrie. They made it to the conference finals. Now, maybe getting swept was a disappointment, not having more resistance against that Cavs team. But LeBron was running all over the Eastern Conference for a decade. I think that the Bucks looked at the game film from game one and said, man, we make those shots. And Boston doesn't make those shots.
All those things are true.
How
are they going to clear out that lane for Giannis, though, so he can make that Euro step, so he can take those two dribbles from half court?
So they need to get back to playing faster.
Okay.
But to me, I guess we're just disagreeing on what an adjustment is in this regard. The Bucks, what they didn't do well was the pace they played.
How many points did they score in game number one?
Not a problem throughout the regular season.
They got to get back 90. To that pace.
Yeah, of course. Of course. But that is not – I think the Bucks can say – and to me, a team that is in a
– if we do a bad show and we end up having a meeting with our bosses and everything, ultimately it's going to come back to, man, how many shows do we have in the bag where we did great? So let's get back to what we did, which is an adjustment. Maybe you like to call it something else, but doing what you do, and if you're not doing it, you have to adjust to be able to get back to that. Even if you've had 5 or 6 months, the intensity's different. Every shot is more contested. The refereeing is different. So how do I do that in this new environment? That's the trick for young teams.
Then I think you actually agree with Giannis, because I think all Giannis was saying is we need to play the way that got us here, the way we played all year. We were not able to execute that in game one against Boston. We don't need to reinvent ourselves. We need to be the team that blew out teams 49 times this year, that had the best defense in basketball, and where Giannis played like an MVP.
And it's important to note, he did go on to say, now if we play like that in two games, then we will actually have to make
adjustments. Well, if they lose tonight, they're in really bad shape.
All right, coming up, did the Sixers prove they can win the East last night? That's ahead on First Things First. FS1 is your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the biggest personalities on the biggest stories. We get you started right here with First Things First. Catch it all Monday through Friday only on FS1. As we work our way towards the start of the 2019 NFL season, a quick look at the landscape in the NFC. Remember, it took the Rams overtime to squeak by the Saints in last year's NFC Championship. Both teams will jockey for dominance in their conference this season. You won't have to wait longer than week two for said jockeying as they face each other. Rams and Saints both projected to win 10.5 games this season, the most in the conference. All right, CC, in your opinion, the best team in the NFC is who?
I believe there's a number of teams going to be really good. I like the way they predicted as far as Chicago, Green Bay. I believe those teams would be good, Philadelphia. But I believe one of those teams is going to emerge. And I got my eye on Chicago because I just believe that they present a number of problems. I believe their offense will continue to get better and continue to be a little more consistent. I believe their quarterback will become more of a pocket quarterback as he gets older and gets more seasoning. But I believe in what they're doing. All these teams are bottled up, And I believe that one of these teams is going to come out of training camp, have a stellar September and October, and run out to that big lead that's going to get them in the 12-win category. And I believe the Bears are a team that we should watch. I believe the Saints will be good. Don't know if the Rams are able to approach their Super Bowl. I believe their defense, especially the middle of that defense, lack of linebackers, lack of Ndamukong Suh there next to Aaron Donald. I believe the Saints will be there. You're going to have to be able to deal with the Saints, but I believe that the Chicago Bears, and if I see there's a sleeper, I say watch out for the Philadelphia Eagles.
The Rams, I think Vegas got this half right. I have enormous concerns about the Rams. I've always had a level of concern about their quarterback. You mentioned the middle of their defense. They weren't good against the run last year, even with Ndamukong Suh. Ndamukong Suh almost assuredly is not going to be on the team next year. We don't know what team he's going to be on. And for the Rams, the guy right over my shoulder, I guess this shoulder, Todd Gurley, if he's not all pro Todd Gurley, that team is drastically different.
He wasn't even available, Todd Gurley, a few months ago.
Yeah, and they scored 3 points in the Super Bowl.
Right.
And so, to me, the Saints have the strongest case. The Saints would be my preseason pick, similar to Vegas. The Saints have an argument that each of the last 2 years, they've been the most well-rounded, most consistent team in the league. Think about how they got knocked out of the playoffs each of the last 2 years. It took a play called a miracle 2 years ago, the Minneapolis miracle. And I believe that NFC Championship game, even in Philadelphia, would have gone very differently if it was Nick Foles and Nick Foles, Case Keenum versus Nick Foles, Drew Brees. And then this year, it took one of such a controversial call that the NFL's changing the way we make those calls. The Saints have a legitimate question at number two receiver that they tried to acknowledge, they tried to address during the season last year. Dez Bryant popped his Achilles. They were not able to address it during the draft, to my liking. And so I think that is a real thing. But I like the way they've built their defense. They should get a full year out of Marcus Davenport. So much like Vegas, the Saints would be my pick as well.
I got a couple of concerns about the Saints. I got a concern about their overall physicality. I know that Mark Ingram will be missed. Latavius Murray coming over from the Vikings, I'm very familiar with him. He's not a guy that can catch the ball out of the backfield, runs a little high, a little upright, not the kind of power back that you would have opposite of Alvin Kamara. So I'm concerned about that. I do believe that Jared Cook does help them out as tight end. They have not had a tight end weapon in a number of years. But they don't have a bunch of speed on their offense. They don't have a bunch of speed at wide receiver. Michael Thomas, man, he's a possession wide receiver. And the lack of speed overall, I'm concerned. I know that Sean Payton will address that as they go throughout the season. But they do have some holes. And their biggest hole, I believe, is their secondary. Their secondary has not been consistent. Last year, gave up a lot of big plays after a rough start. Got some consistency at the end of the season, but it is a concern.
The big question for their secondary is Lattimore and Eli Apple, full season together. They obviously picked up Eli Apple midway through the year. And as far as explosiveness, that's where this team obviously is going to rely incredibly heavily on Alvin Kamara. Like Ted Ginn, I understand, is in theory a deep threat, and the defense also respect him. But as he ages, Alvin Kamara is the guy that on a play-by-play basis threatens you with the Saints. But
I don't know if he's going to be as good. If you put 300 carries on him, is he the same running back? So that's what I'm talking about with the Mark Ingram
being gone on Latavius Murray.
Yes, Mark Ingram was their primary between the tackles runner. And if I move Alvin, because I know he wants to be a starter, you know the reason why? Because he wants to get paid.
Right.
And he know he can't get paid as a backup. So I'm concerned about that. Him getting more, does that make him better?
CC made a good point that there's going to be a lot of teams in the NFC bunched up coming out of training
camp. Yeah.
Packers, Bears, Eagles, Cowboys, Seahawks, these two teams we're talking about here. Talk about the Packers and where you think they could be this year. With a healthy Aaron Rodgers coming in, new coach.
I think it's really interesting the way they did the draft and the way they did free agency. They clearly have decided the money we're spending on offense is dedicated to the quarterback, and the quarterback plus those three young receivers we drafted last year, drafted the last couple years, they will grow and develop with Aaron Rodgers. He will be able to sustain the offense. And I feel like they took a page out of Chris's notebook, which is you play in the NFC North. You're not one of the two teams in the NFC North that plays in a dome. So get a defense where you can win a playoff game 21-17. So they added both Smiths defensively in free agency. Mm-hmm. They spent their first-round picks on defensive players. So they clearly want to make it so Aaron Rodgers, they helped Aaron Rodgers without adding skill position guys to him. They helped him by making it so he doesn't have to go out and outscore everybody. The Bears Bears to the Packers to me, rather than the Bears, would be the favorites in that division, only because I have enormous questions about Trubisky. And but they need that defense to instantly meld or gel, similar to the Giants a few years ago when they had the major free agent acquisitions, brought in five high-priced defensive players, and that carried them to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. They're relying on the skills of the veteran defensive coordinator and hoping he can bring this defense together. Last year's draft, heavy concentration on defensive players, first three players in last year's draft. So they were trending this way, went out and spent the big bucks as far as free agency. If there is a team more dangerous at six wins coming back than the Green Bay Packers, I don't know them in the NFL. I believe that they're going about this the right way. Get more physical on that defensive side. Have Aaron Rodgers, because a good quarterback is going to win you 3 to 5 games. Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback. That defense on the field, if Aaron is able to win you those 3 to 5 games, then the Packers are right where they are expected to be. Take that pressure off of, because let's not forget, just like the Browns get criticized, the Packers got a rookie coach.
Yep.
And we should, every conversation we have, we should mention that.
Nice to be talking football again. Coming up, did the Sixers prove they can win the East last night? We're going to go back and talk basketball next on FS1. And First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we're joined by Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Mannix.
What up, Mannix?
What's
good
up?
To see you, brother.
You too.
Excellent. His SI television show yesterday with Sarah Kustak was outstanding.
Thank you, man.
Really good stuff. All right, Sixers, Raptors, Mannix game two, and it was the Jimmy Butler show with Joel Embiid playing sick. Butler had 30 points, 11 rebounds, and a 94-89 Philly win. Their first win in Toronto since 2012, snapping a 14-game losing streak. All right, so the series is tied now. Game three in Philadelphia on Thursday. Here's Sixers head coach Brett Brown after the game.
This was James Butler. Like, that was the adult in the gym.
Coach came in here and he said, this wasn't Jimmy Butler tonight, it was James Butler, because
how
mature.
My name isn't James, literally it's Jimmy.
He talked about your maturity. What do you think he was seeing there that made him feel that way?
I don't know. I'm telling you, they put a lot of confidence in me before the game. I put in a lot of work last night as well as this morning. But all in all, man, it was a team effort. I always go back to defense. You know, we get stops, we're taking off into the open floor. Guys are making plays like Joe and Ben. You know, whenever we're playing like that, guarding like that, We're such a good team. We definitely have to continue to do it and know that on any given night, it's going to be somebody's night. We have the group of guys that anybody can get hot. Anybody can put the ball in the basket. You feed that hot hand.
All right, Chris Mannix, how did the Sixers beat Toronto last night with Joel Embiid being as sick as he was?
Well, this was the most impressive win of the postseason for any team, I thought. I mean, backs against the wall, you know, Philadelphia after getting pretty roundly beaten in game one to bounce back in the way that they did. I think it did start defensively. Kawhi Leonard had a great game, but Kawhi Leonard during that game, I'm watching him, and he was doing a lot of un-Kawhi-like things. I mean, one of the things I like about Kawhi is that there's very little wasted motion in his game. He either attacks or he moves the ball, and he was just kind of holding the ball and hanging around, dribbling a little bit too much. That was number one. And holding that Toronto bench to just, 6 points in that game, that was incredibly impressive. To outscore them, 26-5 or something along that range, that was outstanding. I mean, their ability to lock in on that end of the floor and make Siakam shoot a low percentage and hold the bench to what they did, that was remarkable. And Butler, we talked about this going into the postseason. Like, he's the one guy on that team, it's capable of taking over a game late. And that shot he made in the fourth quarter off that kind of looping pass from Joel Embiid to put that down, there's nobody else on that Sixers roster that can make a shot like that. So they had Butler playing outstanding, and their defense was terrific from start to finish.
Well, and so I agree with you on the defensive part of it. And you guys know before the year the Sixers were my finals pick. I've obviously moved off that since then. So, but I would love to say, look what the Sixers can be after everyone was killing them in game one. Unfortunately, I can't, because I think so much of what happened last night is not sustainable for them. I felt that the entire second half, despite having a 13-point halftime lead, they were holding on for dear life. It felt like there were, and not it felt like, there were four separate times where the Raptors were in the midst of a run, came down the court, got the exact shot they wanted, and open three, whether it was from Danny Green, whether it was from Kawhi, and they just couldn't make the shot that would have put them over the hump, the shot to either tie the game or take the lead. And it just felt to me that, yes, Jimmy Butler was sensational, and defensively, especially in the first half, that's the type of defense Philly has to play. And the bench unit was shocking that their biggest weakness not only neutralized but heavily outplayed the Raptors' biggest strength. But so much of what happened in game two to me was not sustainable for them moving forward. I think Philly would be fortunate when they go back home just to get a split. Not to protect home court, but just to get a split, because Embiid does not have an answer for Marc Gasol and never has throughout his career. He's not going to get healthier from his knee standpoint. He might get healthier from he was dealing with a stomach bug yesterday. Mm. And the energy Ben Simmons is clearly expending on the defensive end against Kawhi, he was a not only a non-factor, a negative factor on the offensive end yesterday. So all of that concerns me for Philly, even though, to your point, they have to be thrilled as 8-9 point underdogs to go into Toronto and get that win.
A few points. Ben Simmons is too young to be tired on the offensive end because he's playing defense. I know Nick likes Ben Simmons and everything, so that. As far as the biggest win of the playoffs, this was an encouraging win. Biggest win of the playoffs, the Clippers coming back to be able to beat the Warriors.
Sure.
But to be able to win a game where your franchise player is sick, doesn't have his best stuff, it's got to be very, very encouraging. When your bench plays the way they do, now that's the way how they get through game number two, but can they sustain that? I don't think they're going to be able to sustain that. Your guy, Greg Monroe, you talked about last year.
I wasn't going to say
he got the message.
Greg Monroe got the numbers, baby. He comes in, puts 10 points in right away.
Oh. Probably have to retire now on a sprained ankle after leaving the game.
Goes out on top.
But I would just say you have to be encouraged. Going into this, your best sub, Mike Scott, averages 8 points a game, best off the bench you have. You're able to get a split. And, no, I can't slow down Kawhi, but I might be able to slow down Siakam.
Yep.
And that might and be the path to be able to be able to win a game. Toronto, their bench has got to be able to show up in Philadelphia. But great win for Philadelphia by putting the offense and the ball in Jimmy Butler's hands, which I believe is a significant difference in how they're trying to run things. If Joel Embiid's healthy, though, in game three, they always play different. They can't seem to get that continuity in Brooklyn. He was out. The offense looked great. Last night, he's injured. Not himself. Their offense looked better. But from a defensive standpoint, to be able to advance, they have to keep that up, Jenna.
So I wanted to ask you about that. Why is it this Sixers team seems to come together when either Joel Embiid is not on the floor or not giving 100% when someone else has that need to step up on the court?
I don't know. It's an interesting question. I don't know that there's – I don't think that Joel Embiid is any kind of luxury for this team, that's for sure. I just think that in this moment, you saw Jimmy Butler do what he was brought there to do. He is the one guy that can make those types of plays in those types of situations and take over in the fourth quarter. And that's why they really brought them there. I mean, they gave up a lot to go get Jimmy Butler, and his ability to take over games late was huge for them.
And let's be clear, Jimmy Butler saved them offensively, but they still only scored 94 points.
Yeah.
Going into last night, teams in the playoffs that scored 95 points were 2-13. Like, so their offense was not good enough to win. It was only good enough to win because their defense was so great. And Danny Green missed a bunch of shots, including an open three to tie the game at the end. And Kyle Lowry had seven quarters of comatose offense until he woke up in the fourth quarter. This is why it's so concerning for me, if you're rooting for Philadelphia. Jimmy Butler's not going to do this consistently. He had 36 points in the first game of the playoffs. Then he went 7, 16, 11, 9, 10, and now 30. Oh, Jimmy came did it again.
But why is that? That's a question right there.
Right, that's who he's been since Philly's acquired him. I don't know the answer why. It's one of the reasons why, if you're Philly, you might be a little skeptical about, are we going to max out Jimmy Butler this summer? But Kawhi's 35. I think it is sustainable. Yeah. And maybe not quite 35, but we said yesterday he's not going to score 45 a night, but we expect him to score 30 each game of this series. And so I think Toronto can play so much better. And Philadelphia has some of the same systemic issues they had going into the series.
I think Philadelphia, there's always a power struggle. I mean, who's going to get credit? I believe in that locker room, people don't talk about it a lot, but Joel Embiid always wants to get credit. Ben Simmons wants to be able to get credit. And then when they relinquish the power to Jimmy Butler, he's capable of doing it. But the inconsistency for him to be a max player, that is a problem for the Sixers.
I'm with you, too. I don't think you go in. I don't think that Toronto goes into Philadelphia feeling like they have been exposed or anything like that. Mm. I think guys like Van Vliet are going to play better. I think Siakam is more the player we saw in game one than the one we saw in game two. I think you still have to have a lot of confidence that organically you're going to play better if you're Toronto in game three. And Philadelphia, I just don't know. I mean, 94 points is not going to get it done against Toronto.
No, it never
gets
it.
Not in a seven-game series.
3-14 now teams in the playoffs that score under 95. Game three, though, one thing that has happened for Philly, Tobias Harris got to show up.
Yep.
Tobias Harris was very important in round one. Mm-hmm. He's yet to play well in round two. They need his offense immediately in game three in Philly.
All right, we got to take a break. Mannix will see you a little bit later. Coming up.
That was good. We don't need him later. No, we're good.
You're good.
We're going to bring Chris Mannix back a little bit later.
Talk
coming
Celtics
up.
With him.
Did Boston
Should
win?
Be fun.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.